Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right, let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Genesis chapter 32. Genesis chapter 32, that's where we're going to be at this morning as we continue our series Beyond VBS. I want to take a moment here at the beginning just to say thank you to Pastor Logan. Pastor Logan learned that he would be preaching on Saturday afternoon after I was unable to get out of the bed for most of Saturday, and Sunday wasn't too much better. I was able to take myself to the doctor, but thankfully, Lord blessed me with a quick recovery. But I just want to say thank you to Pastor Logan. He did. It's always easier to preach your own sermon than it is someone else's, because no matter how great and adept we all are at public speaking, the way our brain has thought flow is all different. And so, great job. Especially on a document that probably had grammatical errors all over it and all of that. Pastor Logan did a great job. So today we're going to pick up just a few chapters later in Genesis. We will be out of Genesis next week. Next week we'll be in the book of Daniel. And so you can go ahead and read if you want to read about the fiery furnace story. That's most likely where we're going to land. So Daniel's three friends will be the stars of the show next week. But today, the star of the show is, the main character is Jacob. And so Jacob is the son of Isaac, who Pastor Logan talked about last week, and the grandson of Abraham. And so Jacob is the one through whom the promise of God was to come. So it's, you know, in the Bible we hear about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? As that's the patriarchal fathers through whom the promise, God's promise to Abraham's descendants, Israel, eventually would come. However, it didn't start out that way because, see, and this is where we're going to talk a little bit about context to get us to chapter 32. Isaac and his wife Rebekah have two kids. In fact, they're twins. And so there's another son. His name is Esau. And Jacob and Esau, to say, have a difficult relationship would be an understatement. In fact, after the last bit of sibling rivalry happens earlier, Jacob flees. And he actually runs away because he thinks his brother is going to kill him. Ooh, right? That's bad. And Jacob runs away and lives with some distant relatives. And there he finds his wife. Well, he actually has two wives. And let me just kind of stop right here. I'm going to give you another Bible reading tip just in a little bit. But here's another one. Whenever you read narrative stories, that's what Genesis is. It is a narrative story. Whenever you read a narrative story and the story tells you something, that doesn't always mean that it is, here's the key word, normative for Christian living. Okay? So just because the story narrates that Jacob has two wives does not mean it is normal that Christians should have two wives. Guys, that was your point to go, amen. You totally blew it. You totally blew it. I was giving you opportunity to get some brownie points and you dropped the ball. All right, maybe next time. All right, so but he ends up gaining wives. God blesses him. He has a slew of kids. He has flocks of hundreds of different of animals of all kinds. And as eventually as the story goes, it's time for Jacob to leave his distant relative's land. And so he's leaving with all of his kids, with his wives, all of the kids, servants, and a slew of herds. Camels and goats and sheep and cows and donkeys and all of this that God's blessed him with. He's going back home. There's only one problem with going back home. His brother, right? And so Jacob is unsure of how his brother Esau is going to receive him. Now, it has been decades since they've been together, right? They're both older men at this time. But sometimes those rivalries still bear their heads after many, many decades. And so after all of these decades, Jacob is unsure of how Esau is going to receive him. So he has a plan. He sends some servants to go check out Esau's temperament and see how he's going and tell him, hey, just so you know, I'm a-coming, right? And so when they do, Esau receives them, and then he gathers, the text tells us, he gathers 400 men to go meet Jacob. So when Jacob's servants get back and tell him, hey, Esau received you, but here's the bad news, he's bringing 400 men. How do you think Jacob receives that news? It's not a rhetorical, you feel free to answer. How does he receive that? How would you receive the news? Worry, not well. Fear, dread, right? So then that gets us to chapter 32. So Jacob has a plan of how he's going to meet his brother. Here's the plan. The first thing he's going to do is he's going to send him a copious amount of animals from the variety of his flocks. So he sends him hundreds of animals. That just shows you how big his herds were, that he could easily part with a large percentage of his flock, or a percentage of his flock, some of them in the hundreds of animals, right? And so he's going to send them as a gift. And then he's going to divide his family in two halves. So one's going to camp over here, another's going to camp over here. And then after the gift of animals goes through in front of Esau, then he's going to send the families kind of in a wave. And then after all of that, so he's going to send him a gift, then he's going to send him, the rest of the herds are going to go through, and then he's going to send his family. And after all of that, then Jacob's going to come, right? So this serves two purposes. One, you've given your brother a large gift of I'm sorry. Plus, it also shows Esau that, hey, listen, I don't need what you have. God has blessed me. I'm not coming with scheming and conning and games. I'm coming to reconcile. Also, after you've spent the whole day in the way I look at this thing that Jacob's line out, it's like a military parade, right? I mean, it's wave after drove after drove. Well, those droves of people and animals got to do something, right? They got to go somewhere. So imagine you and your 400 men, and here come a 200 goats. Well, then you got to have some people of the 400 to break off to do something with 200 goats, or else goats are going to be where? Everywhere. And then here come the cows, and then here come the sheep, and here come the camels. So you got more men to break off and more. And then you wait, and then here comes the whole family. Well, what are you going to do with the whole family? You got to do something with them, because hospitality says you got to do something with them. So there's part of it that is wise on Jacob's part, is that he's stringing this thing along to kind of congest the area and wear everybody down so that hopefully everything will go okay. All right, so this is where we pick up. All right, so this is taken all day to lay all of this game planning. There could be more or less. Here's the 50 cows that we're going to give, and here's the rest we're going to keep, and here's the camels we're going to give, and here's the sheep, and here's the goats. Now, you shepherds, you take care of them, and y'all take care of them. And it's taken all day to divvy all this out and get this family settled over here and get that family group settled over there. And so by the time we pick up our portion of the story in verse 24, here's what it says. And Jacob was left alone. All right, now we can stop right there, because we can learn a lot from chapter 32, 1 to 24, this first part. And Jacob was left alone. So here's the picture. Here's the scene. It's at night. The previous verse, verse 23, says, Jacob took his family and broke them into groups across the brook. Right? So he's on one side. Everything else is on the other. He's alone. What did we just say he was? Scared. Nervous, anxious, afraid. Can we say we've all been there? Right? Here's the one thing I love about the Bible. It never shies away from the human element of the story. And it makes it very easy for us to relate to the characters in the story, to the people who are going through them, because those things that they are experiencing are the very same thing that you and I experience. Maybe not on the day-to-day, but on at some point. We've all been alone, scared, afraid, tired, unsure of what the future holds, not sure how this thing's going to go, right? That's where Jacob is at. Now, this is where the story, so we're good to the period after alone. The next part, though, is where it gets really, really interesting, okay? Let's read it, just a few verses. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. Verse 25. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. All right, 26. Then he said, let me go. This is the man said, let me go, for the day has broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. 27. And he said to him, what is your name? And Jacob said, Jacob. 28. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. This is where Israel gets the name, Israel, from this story right here. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. 29. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. 30. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. Then the sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. We can stop right there. All right, so what is going on in this story? Okay, what is going on in this story? All right, let's go back all the way back to verse 24. All right, now we've read the part of the story that's the important part. Let's just be honest, it's very, very weird and very unusual. And so we got to do some digging to kind of figure out what's going on in this story. But if you follow with me for the next few moments, I promise it'll be worth it at the end when we get there. All right, so Jacob is alone. He's afraid. He's anxious. He's tired. All of the emotions he's going through. And then the text tells us, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. In other words, Jacob wrestled with someone until from dark till dawn. Dusk to dawn kind of thing. All night, Jacob wrestled with somebody. Now, let's talk about that word wrestle for a minute. The word wrestle here means what you think it means. Or some people, wrestle. All right, you put an A in there. Wrestling, all right? It means the kind of base root of the word means to roll around in the dirt, to get dirty. So when I heard that, when I read that today, I was taken back. I was taken back till when I was a kid, up until about my ninth grade year. Man, I loved wrestling back in the day. It came on Saturday. That was back when we didn't have a 1,000 channels to watch, and I think it was Saturday afternoon. Saturday evening, man, my favorite group was Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal. That came out. Y'all know who? Come on now. Spike shoulder pads, faces painted, mohawks. Oh, man, I loved it. Hulk Hogan dropping the leg. I spent like 30 minutes watching old wrestling video on YouTube after I was doing this, right? It took me back. In fact, all the way up until ninth grade, in ninth grade, spring semester of ninth grade, me and a bunch of my friends, we got into WCW Nitro and WWF Monday Night Raw. Come on now. Come on. It was great. And we knew it was theatrics, but we would watch it Monday night. And see, they would time it just right where you could watch one while the other was at commercial break. This was before you could, DVR stuff for y'all young folks, right? You had to watch it live or you didn't see it. Right, and so we could watch one while the other's a commercial break, and then you had to be real quick because as soon as this went to commercial break, you had to flip back over because the other one was about to start. And so they had these storylines going, and so we'd watch it on Monday nights, and then during first and second period, we'd talk about how Stone Cold Stun you know, did the Stone Cold Stunner on somebody and all of that. It was great. And so we talk about, oh, what do y'all think's going to happen next? And then, you know, we watched it for spring semester. And then as the, you know, semester got on, we kind of all faded out. We never did it again, right? But man, we were all in it, wrestling, right? And so Jacob is in this wrestling with someone. Now, who's he wrestling with? Let's talk about that for a minute. So the text tells us right here, it says, and a man. But then later on, around verse 30, Tucker, pull, I think it's verse 30. Verse 30, yeah. Verse 30, Jacob says, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. So wait a minute. Is it a man? Or is it more than a man? Or is it more than a man? What's going on in this story? Well, thankfully, Hosea, the prophet Hosea, gives us some help. Because in Hosea chapter 12, verse 4, he talks about this story. And here's what it says. He is in reference to Jacob. Jacob strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. So, who did Jacob strive with? Come on, let's try it again. I just gave you the answer. Who did Jacob strive with? An angel. Okay, now here's the question. Why does Genesis call it a man? Because here's the reality. It's the same reason that in Genesis 18, we know that Abraham, Jacob's grandfather, meets more than men. Three men come to his house and say, this time next year we're going to come back, you're going to have a child, right? And Sarah laughs, and Abraham's like, hey, we got to serve him a meal, and all this, right? And it's the reason that Abraham doesn't realize that they're more than men. Because you and I, humanity, we have a hard time distinguishing what's more than human and what's not. And Moses, who writes this in Genesis, is doing the best that he can to describe what is going on. And sometimes, let's be real, sometimes our ineptness of language hinders us from describing what's going on. You've all been there, and it may not have even been like a have you ever tried, getting ahead of myself. Have you ever tried to describe something and you couldn't find the words to describe it, and the best thing you could do is, I just felt something. I had a gut feeling. We've all done that, right? Why do you say you have a gut feeling, and why can't you describe in words the feeling that you're having? Because sometimes our language is unable to convey exactly what we're feeling. And sometimes, and we all know what we mean, I just got a gut feeling about this. That's somewhat of what's going on in this passage, is Moses is trying to convey what is going on in the life of Jacob. Right? So Jacob thinks he's wrestling a man, but he's wrestling more than a man. He's wrestling an angel. Now that we got that away, who's Jacob wrestling? Very good. Y'all are listening. Good job. Now, what we do realize in this story is Jacob is a pretty adept young man at wrestling. Right? Now, earlier in Genesis, what we've learned about Jacob is he's pretty strong. In fact, now, some of you could say this was probably bravado and him showing off for a pretty young lady. Because when Jacob gets to the land of his relative that he's going to live with, he ends up at a well, and a pretty young lady named Rachel, who will end up one day being his wife, is at the well trying to water the sheep, but there's a giant stone on top of the well. And the text tells us by himself, Jacob throws the stone off. That's pretty strong. Then throughout Jacob's life, we realize Jacob is pretty adept at dealing with people. He's a schemer. You could just say he's good at business. Some people might say he's a con artist. Others might say he just uses his talents well. Right? And so you see that Jacob, through his life, whether it's his physical strength or his mental acumen, he's really good with people. But what do we see here? He's not as good with the angel as he is with people, but yet the angel is still struggling with Jacob. So what's going on? What is this battle really about? This is the crucial question, okay? This is the crucial question. What is this battle really about? Well, we got to do a little digging in order to find out the answer. Because although Jacob is a pushover, what we also see is the angel is really stronger than Jacob, right? Because what happens? The angel only touches, what is it? Touches his hip. Now, the Hebrew is really difficult right here because it's very, it's not as precise as maybe you and I would like it to be. And so what happens is the angel touches him somewhere up in this region, and the way it's phrased, it can either be a severe bruise of the muscle that like hematomaized, I can make up that word, right? That basically really injures the like this portion of the muscle. It can mean a dislocated hip, or it can mean some other severe injury to the upper leg region, a pulled groin or a severe bruise. But regardless, the angel only has to touch him in order for that to happen, right? And then Jacob asks for this blessing, and the angel blesses him. So again, we ask, what is really going on here? Again, the angel is clearly stronger than Jacob. Now I want to ask you a question. All right, so that's point number one. What's really going on? The angel could easily win the battle, right? I mean, he could touch both hips, right? And then Jacob can't move at all. He could touch both shoulders, and then Jacob's completely out. Now, I don't know about you. Have any of you been in a friendly but competitive wrestling match? I had another funny story about wrestling. Nobody on this side has been in a friendly but competitive wrestling match at any point in their life. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate that. Of anybody over there, I figured it would probably be you. All right. So, funny story. We are in seminary. Let me rephrase that. Seminary. We're all married. Some of us have kids. We're at First Baptist Church of Atlanta in like an auxiliary classroom. And we got to seminary. We left. I left South Georgia at left at 5 something to get to Warner Robins by 5:30 so we could travel to North Atlanta, because you never know what traffic's going to be like trying to get from South Atlanta to North Atlanta. And we had to start class at 9 a.m. and we went to like 9 p.m., okay? Different classes throughout the day. So we had a lunch break, and that day we ate lunch really quickly and got back and had like about an hour and a half to kill between our first afternoon class, right? And so we're in this classroom. It's a huge room. It's a room about this size. And one of my friends, he's kind of a pot stirrer, you know? And so my other friend he was going to seminary at the time, he's a giant. I mean, compared to me especially. He's like 6'5", 6'4". He's, you know, played college baseball, big guy, broad shoulders and all that. And my buddy's like, hey, I bet y'all won't wrestle in here. And I'm like, come on, man. So, you know, and then everybody else jumps in. So me and him, we are going at it. I mean, it's like high school, like wrestling. Like, we're not throwing punches, okay? Let me be clear. But we are wrestling in the floor. I mean, we got under a table and jumped up, and the table goes flying, plastic table goes flying. I mean, it sounds like somebody is in a fight in this room. It got so loud. Listen, we're seminary, married, kids. We're making so much noise that the professor in the class next to us, might I add, the class next to us was one of those like temporary partition walls. So it must have sounded like we were in his classroom. He comes in there, and there's like, by this time, I mean, we're red-faced, sweating. I mean, we're grappling all on the ground, rolling all over each other. And there's like 5 or 7 other people around just watching, cheering everybody, cheering us on, you know. I mean, he walks in and sticks his head in the door. And y'all, if you could have seen the look on his face, he's probably in his like mid-30s. He had this look like, what are y'all doing? And he just calmly said, I mean, can y'all like keep it down in here? We're trying to have class. And me and my buddy jumped up like, yeah, man, we're good. Yeah, hey, we got it. We're good. Now, let me tell you what did not happen in that moment of friendly but intense competition. And I wrestled in high school as well for 1 year. Hated every moment of it. That's why I only did it 1 year. And in that moment, or in high school, when I was in mutual combat with my friend, you know what I never asked, or an opponent, you know what I never asked them for? Never. Hey, you mind blessing me? I'll let you go if you bless me. Never happened. Not once. Not one time when I had someone, when someone had me, you know, in a hold, or I had them, never once did they go, hey, do you mind blessing me? No, it was a bunch of grunts and groans and moans and strains and all of that sounds. Not once, not one time did I or anyone else go, hey, bud, this can all be over if you'll just bless me. Not once. But that's exactly what Jacob does here. So he's wrestling an angel and he's saying, I'll let you go, but you got to bless me first. So what does that tell us? Listen. What does that tell us about the nature of this battle? It tells us it's not physical, but spiritual. You say, well, why does Moses use all of this physically natured language? You know the answer. You know why? Because you've experienced the answer. In just a second, you're going to go, I got it. Because sometimes spiritual battles take physical form. Listen to me. Have you ever been so deep in prayer about an issue that you found yourself crying in the floor, like just in physical anguish, in physical, like, Lord, you got to do this thing? Sure you have. There's been something in your life where you have called out to the Lord and been, God, you got to do this because I can't. And the spiritual nature of the battle has led to physical realities taking hold in your life. You may end up in the floor in tears praying. You may end up like physically, like, hey, I can't eat right now. Hey, I can't eat or dry. I can't sleep right now. Everybody been in the middle of the night, and you've just been praying, and you're in this battle, and like you trying to go to bed, but you can't. And so you're just staring at the abyss of darkness in your room, thinking, God, you got to do something, praying over and over and over and over again about whatever it is. Absolutely we have. And that's exactly what is going on here. It is a spiritual battle. Jacob is wrestling in a spiritual battle that takes physical realities or physical realities occur as an outflow of this spiritual battle that's going on in Jacob's life. And so the question then becomes, okay, if Jacob is wrestling an angel and it's a spiritual battle that takes physical realities, what in the world is God trying to accomplish in this moment? And this is the crux of what is this entire scene is about. God is trying to show or reveal or get Jacob to lose something so that Jacob might win in the end. See, there's this dynamic in God's economy that doesn't make sense to the world because in worldly terms, it doesn't work. But in God's economy, losing is in fact winning many times. Don't believe me? Listen to Jesus. Got a couple verses for you. Matthew 10:39. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Jesus again, Luke 17:33. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life will keep it. You want somebody else besides Jesus? 1 Peter 5:6, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, and at the proper time, He may exalt you. What does it say? Be prideful, be arrogant, show out, do your thing. No, it says what? Humble yourself. See, in God's economy, many times losing is, in fact, winning. In fact, In order to get into God's kingdom, what must we do? Give up all that we are. Forsake ourselves and give our lives over to Christ. So, and to get into God's kingdom, to get a part of God's family, it is about losing, in some sense, losing who we are to gain who He is. And we see that in this story as well. God is trying to wrestle out something from Jacob. What is that something? It is Jacob's own. How can I say this? It is Jacob's natural bent for self-sufficiency. What has Jacob been able to do his entire life? What has Jacob been able to do his entire life? Beat people. How did he gain? How did he gain Esau's birthright? Esau came out of the womb first. He was the firstborn. It should have been Abraham, Isaac, and Esau, but it is not. It is Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. How did Jacob beat Esau out of his birthright? Stew, because he was a good cook. And Esau was ignorant. How did Jacob win the blessing that should have been Esau? Because he outsmarted his father. How did Jacob outsmart his distant relative Laban out of flocks and herds? Because he was a wise herdsman. Jacob, throughout his entire life, was able to use what he had. Listen, I even go one step further. His own, quote-unquote, God-given abilities to do it himself. But in this moment, on the far side of the brook, alone, scared, tired, fearful, unknowing about the future, he could do nothing about what was coming. He could not control. He could not protect his family. He had no idea what to do about this meeting with Esau. And God uses this moment of aloneness, fear, tired, anxious, unknown future, all of that, to lock Jacob into this wrestling match, to pry out of him Jacob's natural bent for self-sufficiency. That's what God's trying to do. He is trying to wrestle out of Jacob something that Jacob does not need to carry back with him in the promise. See, Jacob leaves with all of this. But God says, if you're going to follow me from this point forward in this next chapter in your life, you do not need this anymore in your life. And I'm going to wrestle it out of you, even if it takes all night. Right? And in the end, God blesses Jacob. Why? Here's why. Because Jacob is so in internal spiritual angst that he is unwilling to let go. He is so unwilling to let go of God that he is willing to let go of everything. In other words, it's in essence as Jacob is saying, hey God, I am not letting you go until you bless me, and I will do whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. Lord, what do I need to let go of so that you will bless me? What do I need to let go of? What in my life is hindering me? What in my life is holding me back? What in my life is causing me strife and pain between me and you? Whatever it is, guess what? I'm willing to let that go. And in essence, Jacob does. What's the sign of that? Jacob gets a new name. And no longer is he called Jacob, he is called Israel. Right? From that point forward, Israel. That's why Israel, the state, is called Israel today. Because in this moment, right here, Jacob was like, hey, I'm unwilling to let go until you bless me so much that I'm willing to let go of everything that's hindering me. And this new name is a sign that Jacob lets go of everything and moves into following God as God wants him to be. So, who's Jacob wrestling? I'll try again. Who's Jacob wrestling? What is God trying to do? Wrestle out issues in Jacob's life. For Jacob, it's self-sufficiency. Why? Because God knows he can't take that with him anymore. Why? Because God's got greater things in store for him in the future. Right? So, that's the story. Jacob wrestles with an angel. He's so unwilling to let go that he willingly lets go of everything. So, what in the world does this have to do with you and me? Well, there are 1,001 things that we could take out of this story. I mean, literally, there's a lot, right? But I want to talk about just one because that's all we've got time for in our remaining moments this morning, all right? I want to talk about one. And here's the idea. It's in your outline. It's in your outline. Here's the idea. God overtly acts. Notice the word. I chose that word with intent. God overtly acts to bring us to reform and transformation. Listen to me. If you and I were honest, we love to coast. It's okay. You can shake your head. I'm shaking my head with you. We love to coast. We kind of find our groove and we coast until something happens and we realize, uh-oh, can't do that no more. That's exactly where Jacob is at. Jacob has done his thing for all of these years, and then God overtly puts him in a situation that brings him to a crisis of faith, so much that Jacob wrestles with God, with the angel, right? And many times, God overtly acts in our life in exactly the same way. God moves in our life, putting us in uncomfortable positions, states of despair and pain, not as a mode of punishment, but so that we might wrestle those ill-gotten attributes out of us. Read that again. God moves in our life by putting us in uncomfortable positions, states of despair and pain, not as a mode of punishment, but so that he might wrestle those ill-gotten attributes out of us. Right? Listen, several years ago, I was listening to a media interview for Kirby Smart, football coach, University of Georgia. And he made a four-word statement that I was like, I'm gonna remember that one. Here was the statement. Listen to me. Pressure is a privilege. Pressure is a privilege. And I was like, pressure is a privilege. Now, at first glance, you think, no, it ain't. Pressure ain't no privilege. But in a football sense, it is. Because if the coach is pressuring you to be better, what does that mean? He thinks you can be better. He thinks you got more in the tank to give. He thinks you got something in you that can be whittled out, or some bad habits that if they're whittled away, you can be better. Guess what? In life, God puts us in pressure situations, not to be ugly, but to whittle away from us all of the bad things. See, we often say, well, God's really been on my back lately. As if God's trying to beat us down and encumber us with heavy weights. What did Jesus say? My yoke is easy and my burden is light. See, when we realize, quote unquote, God's on my back, God is pressuring us to be better than we currently are because he believes there's more in us that can look like his son Jesus. Pressure is a privilege. And God overtly acts still to this day in our life to put us in pressure situations, not to be ugly, not to be mean, not because he wants to be on your back, and not because God's an ogre, overbearing, but so that he can whittle out of you, wrestle out of you, the parts that don't look like his son. So listen, here's your challenge for the week. You ready? Not going to be an easy one. Not going to sugarcoat it. Here we go. You may find yourself in the dead of the night, in the middle of the hot sun, wrestling with the Lord. Hey, listen to me. Don't run. Don't shirk away. Lean into it. Lean into it. Because in that moment, God is trying to change your life for the better. And listen to me. Listen to me. And if you'll let Him, if you'll quote unquote lose, you will win in the end. Because in God's economy, losing us and gaining more of Jesus is always a winning combination.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.